Abraham sacrificing Isaac. I thought it would be good for us to read it again. I'm going to read and follow again. Genesis 22. Sometime later, God tested Abraham's faith. Abraham, God called. Yes, he replied, here I am. Take your son, your only son, yes, Isaac, whom you love so much, and go to the land of Moriah. Go and sacrifice him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I will show you. The next morning, Abraham got up early. He saddled his donkey and took two of his servants with him, along with his son Isaac. Then he chopped wood for a fire for a burnt offering and set out from the place God had told him about. On the third day of their journey, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. Stay here with a donkey, Abraham told the servants. The boy and I will travel a little further. We will worship there, and then we will come right back. So Abraham placed the wood for the burnt offering on Isaac's shoulders, while he himself carried the fire and the knife, as the two of them walked on together. Isaac turned to Abraham and said, Father, yes, my son, Abraham replied. We have the fire and the wood, the boy said. But where is the sheep for the burnt offering? God will provide sheep for the burnt offering, my son, Abraham answered. And they both walked on together. When they arrived at the place where God had told him to go, Abraham built an altar and arranged the wood on it. Then he tied his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And Abraham picked up the knife to kill his son as a sacrifice. At that moment, the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven. Abraham, Abraham. Yes, Abraham replied. Here I am. Don't lay a hand on the boy, the angel said. Do not hurt him in any way. For now I know that you truly fear God. You have not withheld from me even your son, your only son. No one knows how old Isaac is at this time. Some say he was maybe 10 years old. Some say he could be 20 years old. But we do know one thing, that he and his dad had a close relationship. Why? Because twice we read before that, in verse 5 and verse 8, that they walked together, that they were walking together towards the place of the sacrifice. And from that evidence, we can say that this was not the first time that Abraham and his son went up to offer sacrifice, because it was traditional. And I'm sure God has called on Abraham to sacrifice at several different places already. We can say that Abraham had a good relationship with his son Isaac, because the son was quite obedient. The father-son bond seemed to be very tight, like I said, as they walked together. But what about Abraham's relationship with God and God's relationship with Abraham? For Abraham's relationship with God, it was a relationship of faith. It wasn't always perfect, like we said last week. Abraham didn't have a son. He didn't demand for a son. He just said, look, I got a servant. Why don't he be the heir? And then the second time we know, it was he went and had sex with his wife's servant, Hagar, and Ishmael was born, and God said, that's not the heir. So it wasn't always perfect the way he followed, but he was always resolute in trying to follow. There was a trust in the final outcome, because if you look at verse 5, he said to the servants, the boy and I will go up, the boy and I will return. The obedience was quite immediate for Abraham. In Abraham's mind, he did not think that God was going to stop the knife. You read the story, and what Abraham did was he pulled the knife out, and he was ready to kill his son. What was in Abraham's mind? The text doesn't tell us in Genesis. But Hebrews, in the New Testament, tells us what possibly happened with Abraham. Hebrews 11, the writer, the letter to the Hebrews, wrote a lot about faith and about some giants of the faith, Abraham being the central one. And in the in Hebrews 11, verse 17, it says this: "It was by faith that Abraham offered Isaac as a sacrifice when God was testing him. Abraham, who had received God's promises, was ready to sacrifice his only son, Isaac. Even though God had told him, 'Isaac is the son through whom your descendants will be counted,' Abraham reasoned that if Isaac died, God was able to bring him back to life again. And in a sense, Abraham did receive his son back from the dead." Let's think about this for a moment. What was Abraham's understanding of God? God gave Isaac to Abraham as a promise. Now, Abraham waited 25 years for this son to be born. And now God has asked to take him. The word that is used in Genesis is the word test. And you see that here also. God was testing him. So in Genesis 22, the word is God tested Abraham. And in Hebrews, God was testing him. The word test in the Old Testament, the word that is used here, it's to prove the quality of, to prove the quality of something. Now, we live in a world where engineers are very important because they test things for us. A bridge that is constructed has to go through all the calculations in terms of stress testing. And recently we saw what happened, I think it was in Minnesota, where this bridge was built and then all of a sudden it collapsed after 1 or 2 days of use. Because it has to be proven that it could work. Everything we use is tested. Some of the appliances we buy, it says UL tested. And the reason it is there is to prove that that is what it is. The quality is there. It is not to prove failure. Temptation is to prove failure. When I say I am tempted, it is to see if I would fail or not, right? If I'm tempted by pornography, I'm tempted by alcohol, I'm tempted to sin, I'm tempted to lie, I'm tempted to cheat. It's to prove that I will fail or not. But testing is different. When we go through testing, it is to prove the quality. Unfortunately, today, as some of you are raising children, you know that a lot of times we don't like testing. I know some kids' games, right? Everybody gets an award, or everybody gets a medal. I want to show you a very brief clip, and this is from Meet the Parents, if you remember that movie. It's only a 1 minute clip, so Thomas, whenever you're ready. The volume, please. Noticed it, but everything that was displayed on that wall were participation ribbons. They were not accomplishment ribbons. Somehow today in society, we are so scared that our kids do not have self-esteem or will have low self-esteem that we just, for participating, we give them an award. But you know that that's only the child's world. Because when they go into the world, the whole world is competitive. But unfortunately, sometimes we don't prepare them. And so we're so scared of testing. But the world is all about testing. Going to college is testing. Getting a job is testing. Moving up is testing. We like testing because that is part and parcel of how we move forward in the world, except when it comes to our faith. When we talk about God testing us, then we pull back. We become resentful when trials come. It always seems that God is very cruel when He does test us. Testing is to prove the quality of. Trials and testings are usually very, very hard. Many people who read the text in Genesis says, how can God be so cruel to do something like this? Well, it is important for us because the question always is, who owns the things that we have? I remember when I was very young and we used to have our youth retreat. And always at youth retreat, we have a time called an open forum. And the open forum is where all of us can ask any questions and we have the speaker panel. And inevitably, as kids, we always have this question come up. Why do Christians suffer? You ever thought about that? Why do Christians suffer? And I always like this one pastor's answer. Why not? What makes us immune to suffering? What makes us immune to what is happening in the world? Nothing. Because we live in this world, we're in the world, we're not of the world, as Jesus said. One day we will be of the world. When we die, we go to the ground. Our body will go to the ground, and that was about it. But we're not of the world, and yet we live in the world, and the world is not immune to suffering. The best answer is, why not Christians suffer? Abraham's sacrifice, though, was very different because it was voluntary. Many times we say wake-up call. What is a wake-up call? You go on your life, you live your life, 100 miles an hour, and you just keep going and keep going and keep going. Suddenly you become sick. And we say that's a wake-up call, right? Because it's a signal to slow down. You get diagnosed with something. Your kids do not want to follow Jesus. Your career gets a downturn, and we say, God is testing me. But you know what? It's involuntary. We don't choose that. Abraham was a very different situation because it was voluntary. God says, the son you love, I want him. I want you to give your son to me. Abraham can say no. Abraham can say, wait a minute, let's talk about this, God. You do all these things, make it so hard for me to have this child, and now you're taking, you're unfair. Isn't that how mostly we respond to God when we are called to sacrifice? But this is what happens, isn't it, in a Christian life. God says, I want your son back. And Abraham said yes. But you know what? This was not the first time that Abraham has an experience with God. Four chapters prior to Genesis 22, it's the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. You're familiar with the story where the angels were there and God was standing with Abraham. And God said to Abraham, I'm going to go down to Sodom and Gomorrah and I'm going to destroy it because it's evil. And Abraham thought about it. His nephew was there. Lot was there. And Lot's two daughters were there. Lot's wife, two daughters were there. So remember the story. Abraham says, well, God, what if there were 50 righteous people? Will you destroy the whole city? God says, no, if you find 50, it will be okay. And Abraham said, well, what about 45? What about 40? What about 35? What about 30? You remember the story. Now, some people think that Abraham was bargaining with God. Well, let me ask you. If it's bargaining, you and I wanted to bargain, you have something I want, I have something you want. Let's say you have a car that I want and you're trying to sell the car and I have money that you want in order to exchange for the car. That is bargaining. Now I credit John White, the commentator, who says, what does Abraham have? What does Abraham bring to the table to bargain with God? Nothing. Abraham had nothing to bring to the table. But because Abraham's relationship with God was close enough that he could say, I'm just going to push it, and I'm going to keep pushing it. Now, you know the story. Finally, Abraham said, please don't be angry with me if I speak one more time. Suppose only 10 can be found. What about 10 people? Abraham's counting the righteous people that he think might live there. And the Lord replied, then I will not destroy it for the sake of the 10. When the Lord had finished his conversation with Abraham, he went on his way and Abraham returned to his tent. We know what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah, right? How many righteous people were there? How many righteous people were there? Anybody want to venture an answer? Less than 10. How many? Four? Okay. Another guess? Let me tell you, zero. There are only four people that were saved, right? Lot, his wife, and two daughters. So what happened? The wife looked back midway. She's not supposed to look back. She became a pillar of salt. Throw that out for righteousness. Then when they got there to the place that they were outside, the two daughters decided that they wanted to have sex with the father so that they can have children. Remember Ruth? Ruth was a Moabite. And where did the Moabite come from? The Moabite came from Lot having sex with one of the daughters, and then that was the start. The name was Moab, and that was the start. So there were zero. But why did Abraham stop at 10? You ever thought about that? Abraham should have think more and says, what about four? Let me get four. I think at that point, when he got to 10, Abraham concluded in his heart, you know what? God, you are going to be fair. You are loving and you're going to be fair. Whatever you decide is going to be okay. I believe with all my heart that was where Abraham was. Because when he got to chapter 22, he was okay already. He was okay knowing that God was his God. And if he wanted the son that was given to him, he can take it. Now, I believe Abraham had to be constrained from killing his own son. Now, I know when we give God something, we always like, we give God something where we're like, we hope he doesn't take it. You ever do that? Oh, God, I'm going to give you, I'm not healthy, right? So I'll give my health to you, but I hope you don't take it. You know, I give my sons to you, but I hope you don't take it. Oh, God, I'll give you all my money, but I hope you don't take it. But I believe Abraham had to be constrained. Look at what the angel said. Don't lay a hand on the boy, the angel said. Do not hurt him in any way. Twice, the angel tells him what not to do. And I believe with all my heart, Abraham pushed very hard Because that was what God wanted. That was what God demanded. That's what he was willing to give. I asked you all this question last Sunday. Who does your child or children belong to? Do they belong to you because God's given them to you? Or do they belong to God because he's the ultimate owner? Last night, when Pastor Chia shared, remember what he said the role of parents are. As parents, you are stewards of your children. What's a steward? Steward's a manager. It's ultimately, your children belongs to God. There's serious implications of what this means. If your children belongs to you, then your responsibility is to make sure that they're the best kids possible, that they have the best preparation possible. You hope they marry well. You hope their career goes well. You hope their next generation goes well. If they still go to church, you're okay with it. That's fine. But if your children belongs to God, as Pastor Chow said last night, your goal is to teach them to love Jesus. And let God take care of the rest. This says, who does your children belong to? But let me open it up. Who owns your health? Who owns your career? Who owns your wealth? Who owns your children? Finally, who owns your life? You know, we are going to be called, all of us, to sacrifice that which we think is the most precious. That's when the test becomes, who owns it? I've been telling you stories about our experience this last year in Manila. And I want to tell you one short story. When I came to this part of saying, who owns this? We had a family home, as all of you know, and I had to sell the family home. The first offer to us was in May of last year. And from then until the end of December, there were no other offers. And then right in the end of December, we have this wonderful offer that was much higher. And I remember asking my cousin, I said, should we get like a deposit from them? My cousin, no, it's fine. It's already a done deal. Just fly over. The two of us flew over, and that was the most expensive time to fly. Two of us for $3,000 for economy air just to get there. And when we got there, it was a host of problems with the sale. The buyer kept wanting to change the schedule, wanted to demand this, demand that, and we were delaying. And we had scheduled for only like 17 days to be there. And I had to sell the home, get the money so I can move my brother. And I remember the day after day, it was getting harder and harder. But I'll tell you where my heart was. My heart was so close. Let's just do it. Whatever they want, let's give it to them. And everybody around me, you know, my cousin, my brother, a niece's husband that was helping us legally, uncle, it's so close. Come on. Just a little bit. It was like that for me. And I remember the Thursday night. A week later, it was very frustrating for both of us. And Abigail said to me, I think we should let it go. I said, no, I don't want to let it go. Why? We've already spent $3,000 to fly over there. I've already used up my vacation. Now I got to fly back empty-handed. When's the next buyer going to come? 6 months, no offers. If it was a competitive offer, I'd be very happy. No, there were no offers. Just one offer in May that wasn't solid. Now this one. And I remember standing there in the room, and I said, that was a Thursday night. And I was struggling very hard, emotionally. I finally said to God, I said, God, it's okay. This is your house. I can let it go. I'm okay to fly back to LA with nothing.
as I know the next fire will come for you.
And then I felt this peace that started to come on me. Because what I've done is I put the house on the altar. I said, you want to kill the deal, God? I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. We prayed after that. I said, I'm fine. Let's fly home. We just fly home based on our schedule. The next morning, 7 o'clock, I went swimming because I just wanted to clear my head, come back up. I was ready just to go home. And Abigail said, there's some people, a lot of people texting you. I said, no, I don't want to answer any call. I said, no, we should still listen and pray about it. So then the agent called, and the agent said, so close, it's so close. I said, let me think about it. So we prayed again. And when we prayed again, we felt such a strong sense from God that we want to counter all those things that they were fighting us against. They were keeping us, they kept wanting us to compromise, to change the schedule, to change the names, to withhold money, etc., etc., etc. Then we prayed and we said, okay, I'm going to call him back and I'm going to tell him our demands now. They've been demanding all this time. I said, now I'm going to give them our demands. 11 o'clock, I called them. I called the agent and I said, okay, so here's our demand. We want everything to be done. We don't want to do this. We don't want to do this. We don't want to do this. And by the way, we want to do it this afternoon. Just tell the buyer that's all we want. And we don't want to withhold any money. And I'll pay rent for my brother to stay because we were going to keep some money, but we decided not to do that. All of that. 11 o'clock, hung up the phone. 12 o'clock, we were eating lunch. I said, I don't think anything's going to happen because we just gave a host of demands. They've been giving us demands. We said, we give them demands. 1 o'clock, I got a call. I said, okay. He said, every single thing you wanted, we'll give it to you. I cannot tell you what that means to me. Because it means, not about the money, not about the sale. It meant, wow, this is God. This is God. When he says, give it to me, he doesn't want to take it. He just wants you to know who owns it. Right? If I could have pushed the sale, frankly, I could have pushed the sale, but I would never have seen how big God is. And it was such an eye-opener for the both of us because we were just like shocked. And all God wanted was just put it on the altar. But like I said, a lot of times we put it on the altar, but we say, God, I hope you don't take it. No. When you give it, you have to give it. But you see, God knows our heart and God knows what is needed. We scrambled at 1 o'clock to try and put together to go to the bank. I got to the bank and I went and talked to the buyer. I'd met the buyer before, the week before. And I said, what about the rent? I want to pay you rent for my brother staying for 1 month. He says, I don't need your money. You see how God makes these types of arrangements. Who owns your health? You don't own your health. Anytime you can be diagnosed with anything. Who owns your career? You don't own your career. How many of you have ever had job offers that are beyond your imagination? God owns that career. Who owns your wealth? Many of you who have seen 2007, 2008 saw the downturn and realized how fragile wealth is. Who owns your children? God owns your children. The most important thing, as Pastor Donald said, is to teach our children to love Jesus. I said it another way last Sunday. Your goal is your children to become disciples of Jesus. Everything else will be given. But what about your life and my life? We cannot add 1 minute if we wanted to. But our life belongs to God. Let us pray. Oh Lord God, I pray, Lord, that we recognize that you are God and we are not. And because you are God, that every good gift that comes from God still belongs to God. May we learn the priority that you have given to us. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's all stand.